Hi, and welcome to NASIO Voices, where we talk all things state IT. I'm Amy Glasscock in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Matt Pincus here in Washington, D.C. Today, we'll be talking about broadband, and more specifically, state broadband offices. Anna Reed is joining us today from the Pew Charitable Trusts.
Anna is the research officer for Pew's Broadband Research Initiative, and she's here to talk about a Pew report from earlier this year called How States Are Expanding Broadband Access. Anna, thanks so much for joining us on NASIO Voices.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
So, Anna, before we dive into broadband and the report, can you talk to us a little bit about your background and how you ended up as an expert in broadband for Pew?
Sure. I have a degree in city and regional planning, and I worked on one of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funded state broadband initiative programs to support regional planning activity across the state and help regions create plans to prepare for broadband infrastructure projects. And, you know, those programs wrapped up around 2014, and eventually that led me to Pew and broadband, the Broadband Research Initiative.
And how long have you been at Pew now?
A little over 2 years.
Got it. So from a general perspective, can you give us a brief overview of some of the main issues and challenges just concerning broadband?
Yeah, so one of the biggest challenges related to broadband is, there have been kind of uneven patterns of deployment across the country, and the areas that still lack service are primarily rural, and they're challenging to serve. They require a significant amount of infrastructure with relatively few customers on the other end, which makes it difficult under the current model for companies to find that business case or to see that return on investment necessary to serve those areas. And that's where a lot of the state grant programs that I'll talk about a little bit later come in to help make that business case. And then you add to that, a lot of the other factors like challenging geographies in rural areas, mountainous terrain or factors like that, demographics, declining populations. So you just have a range of challenges that make it difficult to serve those areas.
Got it.
So let's talk about the state broadband offices and why kind of the states felt like they had to create those offices and why that they were needed historically speaking. I think you kind of touched on that a bit, but can you expand on that some?
Yeah. So over the last few years, the majority of states really have created some type of centralized broadband program or office. And these really provide a point of coordination for broadband activities across the state, a central coordinating entity for those broadband efforts within state government so that stakeholders know who to contact, where to go, a place to administer grant programs. And those programs or offices in some states take different forms and they can live in different agencies, but generally they serve similar purposes, again, coordinating those broadband efforts, engaging stakeholders on issues related to broadband, collecting and analyzing data, planning both at the state and local level, and again, administering those grant programs. So it really provides that sort of centralized entity within state government to address broadband challenges.
As we mentioned in our intro, you worked on a report that was published in February about how states are expanding broadband access. Can you tell us about the thinking behind that report and how you went about doing the research for it?
Yeah, so our report focuses on how states are expanding, as you mentioned, how states are expanding broadband access. And we started looking at states because, again, over the last few years, really, the majority of states have created some form of broadband program, and there's been a lot of focus on what's happening at the federal level and also on some of those innovative or well-known local projects, but a lot less research has been done into the what states are doing and the impact of those state programs. But states, again, have been very active and increasingly active in addressing broadband and trying to close the digital divide over the last, especially 3 to 4 years. And so that was why we decided to look at states. And then we started by looking across all 50 states to really get a sense of what states are doing, both in terms of broadband policy and then that programmatic activity. So we combed through statutes and executive orders in all 50 states, and that's available on our State Broadband Policy Explorer, which is on the Pew website. And then also the programs. And from there, we narrowed it down to a set of 9 case study states. And we visited all of those states and we talked with the state broadband program staff. We talked with other state government staff. We met with internet service providers receiving grants from those programs, community stakeholders who are engaged in the planning efforts, and really talked to all these stakeholders to get a sense of what the challenges are in each of the states, what's working with the broadband programs, what might not be working as well, and to really understand how these programs are functioning and how they are closing gaps in broadband access in each of those states.
Yes, Anna, you mentioned you guys visited and picked nine states. How did you select those nine states, just out of curiosity? And, you know, the states, I have them right here: California, Colorado, Maine, Minnesota, North Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. How did you guys decide on those nine states?
So one of the first criteria was that the program had to have been active for at least 2 years. So we wanted to make sure that there was enough of a timeline to understand what the state was doing and how that activity was making a difference. We also then wanted to have some geographic diversity in there. And then also states that, again, have different timelines for their programs. So some states like California and Maine have been working on this for over a decade. Some of the programs like Tennessee and West Virginia were significantly newer at that point in time. We also wanted to look at states that have different resource levels. States have committed state funding towards these programs, and the amount varies. And so you have states that have consistently, like Maine, you know, had a consistent funding stream, but it's been relatively small. You have states like California that have very large pots of money. So to sort of understand what's working and what's not across states that have different characteristics.
Got it. And, you know, one of the things that I really liked about the report was, you know, you talked about these promising practices, and especially when it comes to broadband. And you mentioned one of your first answers was there are a lot of challenges in deployment and, you know, just expanding broadband access across the state. But the report focuses on five promising practices. Can you briefly go over those?
Sure. So as we analyzed the information from the nine different states, we found that states were essentially doing a similar set of things, but the specific activities could look different. And so we identified a set of what we called five promising practices. And those are engaging stakeholders at both the state and local levels. So states are engaging a broad range of stakeholders, you know, recognizing that broadband connects to multiple state priorities like education, economic development, healthcare. So engaging those other state agencies, and then at the local level, engaging stakeholders who are, you know, broadband users within those communities in planning processes, in broadband councils, and so forth. So just for an example, the California Broadband Council, which is chaired by the state's chief information officer currently, was created in statute to provide a forum to bring state agencies together to share information and identify ways to work together to improve broadband access across the state. The second practice is creating a policy framework. So defining goals in statute, creating those offices and grant programs, identifying barriers to broadband expansion, and addressing those in policy. The third is supporting planning and capacity building efforts. So this includes both state level planning and then also local capacity building and technical assistance efforts. So states such as Maine and North Carolina that commit support to local planning or local technical assistance to help communities, you know, identify projects, prepare for funding opportunities. The fourth practice is funding and operations. So providing funding for those grant programs, as well as, you know, for the offices or programs themselves. And then the fifth practice is the program evaluation and then using the evaluation of the program to inform next steps. So, you know, states looking at what's working and sort of deciding on what else needs to be included. And this is where we see, for example, California again has now included a broadband adoption fund and their California Advanced Services Fund, which specifically funds broadband adoption. So they have a large portion of their fund that is committed to broadband infrastructure. They have a couple other sub-accounts there, and they now also have, as of 2017, a broadband adoption specific fund.
So Anna, our executive director, Doug Robinson, always tells us, you know, you've seen one state. And so interested in hearing sort of how are states defining success? Does it look similar across the states that you interviewed, that you went to, or is it pretty different?
I would say at the top level, it's pretty similar. States are defining success by the increase in the number of residents that are connected to broadband. So how many more people have those connections in their homes? But there are some differences in the specific goals that states have set. So for example, Minnesota has a goal of connecting border to border, which is the name of their grant program, the border to border grant program, to service at speeds of 25 megabits per second, download 3 megabits per second as their near-term goal, and then 100 megabits per second, 20 megabits per second as their 2026 goal. So looking further down the road, they're looking at a goal of higher broadband speeds. We're seeing a few other states set those goals as well. So for example, Vermont and Washington State both also have higher speed goals, Vermont at 100 megabits per second symmetrical and Washington State at 150. So connecting residents, but with some variation there. And then the other piece is that states are also starting to address those sort of secondary measures of success. So the affordability and reliability of service, as well as how people are able to use those connections. And so you see a lot of states in sort of their broadband goals or the intentions around their broadband program, you know, highlighting the potential economic benefits, benefits for education, benefits for healthcare. And so starting to highlight those connections as well in those measures of success, just as an example of a goal there. Maine has a goal of universal availability to residents and businesses and community anchor institutions, but their goal also addresses service quality and use, specifying that, you know, the connections need to be secure, reliable, competitive, and sustainable and meet future needs, and that residents and businesses need to be able to take advantage of the economic opportunities that are provided by that access. So again, similar but different.
Yeah, that's so useful. From your research, I know you guys identified some of the, you know, softer skills that people bring to the success. So what kind of components in leadership and staffing contribute to success for state broadband offices?
There are really two pieces here, or two components. The first is that executive leadership. So the leadership from governors. We really heard this consistently across states, that leadership at that executive level is really important to making the broadband program a priority, to highlighting the need for broadband and to moving those goals forward. And the second piece is the broadband program staff. And, you know, I think someone told us, you know, the projects are the people. And we use that quote a lot when we kind of talk about the role of broadband programs and the staff of broadband programs. But through our research, we found that it's really important for those programs to have dedicated staff, you know, who are visible and responsive. Stakeholders know who to contact when they have questions about broadband. I think something that really struck us when we were visiting states and meeting with people is how visible and responsive a lot of the broadband program directors were, you know, spending time attending meetings around the state, obviously pre-pandemic, mm-hmm. and meeting with a broad range of different stakeholders. And then the other piece with the broadband program staff is that, you know, they're really seen as connectors and conveners related to broadband, building relationships and partnerships with multiple stakeholder groups. And so, you know, advocates for broadband in the state, but not advocates for any individual stakeholder group.
Yeah. Do you see any issues between the federal government and state governments when it comes to broadband? And if so, do you have any recommendations for how to foster greater collaboration between state and federal governments?
You know, states are a level closer to the issues. So there's more partnership with local entities and local projects. And that can be a difference between, you know, how federal funding is targeted and how state funding is targeted towards programs. There's always opportunity for, you know, more collaboration. It's a big challenge that requires an investment from all three levels of government, you know, the federal, the state, and the local. There are opportunities for the federal government to learn from what states have been doing that's been working, and always more opportunities for, you know, partnership and input between the federal, the state, and the local entities to address challenges related to broadband.
Yeah,
for sure. So, Anna, when you issued this report, when you guys released this report the end of February, you could certainly say it was a different time in all of our lives. The current pandemic that we are continuing to live in wasn't yet a full reality in the United States. How has COVID-19 affected broadband expansion in the states? And would you say that it's created greater challenges or fast-tracked its expansion in some cases?
Yeah, it definitely seems like February was a different world. I would say You know, it's exposed challenges that were already there. And it's really brought a lot of attention to the issue and the need for broadband for, you know, all of the things that people are talking about now. So the need to be able to go to school online at home, the need to be able to work from home, to be able to access services at home. And with that, there's been a lot of focus on, you know, some of the shorter term solutions to get people online immediately, you know, hotspots, public Wi-Fi access points, connected devices. And so that's been a little bit of a shift in the conversation and something that we've seen a lot of focus on. With that, one of the challenges is maintaining that focus on long-term infrastructure investment and continuing to work towards what states have been investing in over the last several years. So those last mile connections to households.
It just seems so fundamentally, especially now, fundamentally important, right, to have connectivity. And obviously, you know, three of us recording this podcast clearly don't have any issues with that. But I remember a month ago seeing that picture of a couple kids sitting outside of a Taco Bell trying to do school online and use their Wi-Fi. I mean, it's just, it really hits home, you know, just how fundamentally important it is that people have access, especially in a remote learning environment. And it doesn't seem like that's going to change anytime soon. So certainly appreciate, you know, you talking about this. The final question that I have for you is, what's something innovative that a state is doing that you learned about during your research on this report?
So to go back to an earlier point that you made, you know, states are different, and we like to highlight that they are different and their programs look different as a result. So I think one of the things with the Promising Practices is essentially that they're doing similar things, but differently. Mm-hmm. So to highlight a few examples of states that we looked at through our research, Minnesota, which is has long been considered a leader in the space, has their broadband goal, which I mentioned. They have an Office of Broadband Development. They have a grant program, the Border to Border Grant Program, which has invested nearly $110 million over the last 6 or so years towards broadband expansion in the state, and has connected over 50,000 homes, businesses, and community anchor institutions, and has really been a state that other states have looked to as they have designed their broadband grant programs. So they also have a governor's broadband task force, which provides guidance and strategy for the program. So it's been, a leader in the space. North Carolina, which has broadband infrastructure office in the state's Office of Information Technology, created its Connecting North Carolina plan in 2016. And the plan's recommendations have really guided the state's broadband activities over the last several years. So the plan included recommendations on focusing on the homework gap, creating the grant program, and the state has since created its Growing Rural Economies with Access to Technology, or GREAT, broadband grant program, and the provision of technical assistance. And really, again, all three of those have become core components of North Carolina's program over the last several years. And then Colorado, which has its Colorado Broadband Office, which coordinates activities across the state, and then it has several agencies that the Department of Local Affairs and the Department of Regulatory Agencies each provide funding for broadband, and they have funding for both middle mile infrastructure and last mile infrastructure. So really addressing sort of both pieces of the infrastructure challenge necessary to close gaps in access across the state. And so sort of a few examples, again, to highlight that states are doing similar things, but what their specific activities look different across states.
That's great. I love hearing those state examples. Tell us where people can find the report.
The report is available on the Pew Charitable Trust website, which is pewtrust.org.
All right, great. Okay, so as we always do here on NASIO Voices, we're going to be a little less serious for a minute and go to our segment called The Lightning Round. We'll ask you three questions about your life outside of work. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Number one, we are all dreaming of a time when we can freely travel again wherever we want to go by any mode we want to use. Tell us where you want to visit when things return to normal.
It's the time of year when I'm really tired of hot weather, so I would like to go somewhere in the mountains.
Yeah, that does
probably
sound nice.
In the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. All right, number two, we're always looking for new recommendations. So what is a movie you've recently seen or a show that you're currently watching?
I just finished The Last Dance about the 90s Bulls team.
Oh yeah.
Which was the Chicago Bulls team of my childhood. So yeah, it was kind of a fun watch.
Awesome footage and very good footage too from that.
Yeah. That was definitely my childhood as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, number three. If you could have dinner with any famous or historic figure, living or dead, who would it be and why?
I feel like it would need to be more of a dinner party. You know, there are so many people to choose from. so many options. Have to, you know, think about what the tone of that dinner party would need to be.
Really. You want to make sure that nobody would get in a fight or like be on opposite sides of history things.
Yeah.
Take a lot of thought.
There. Well, Anna, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. We really appreciate it and look forward to sharing the report with all of our listeners in the show notes. And we hope to have you back on sometime soon to talk about some new Pew reports that you're working on.
Yeah, thank you again for the invitation.
Thanks.
Thanks again for listening to NASIO Voices.
We'll put a link to the Pew report in our show notes.
Talk with you again in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.